Hey guys, and welcome to season two of A Glass for Every Palette. We had such a blast in season one. I am stoked and excited to bring you guys even more wonderful conversations with some of the most amazing people across food, wine, and culture. And I know that you all tuned in to the live watch of A Year in Burgundy, so I'm here. You have to know about Eldon Selections. It is the first ever Burgundy-only wine club. And no matter what level of understanding your Burgundy knowledge might be at, this will help you find wines that you love, help you enjoy them more, help you understand a little bit more where they came from at a price that is super affordable.
And just for our SOM TV family, here's a promo code that you can use on your first purchase of $200 or more. Enter the code SOM, that's S-O-M-M, when you place your order at www.burgundywine.com.
So make sure you check out Eldon Selections to dive deeper into Burgundy. Let's get into the show.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of A Glass for Every Palette. Can I tell y'all how excited I am about season two? I think season one was like, it was the intro. And now season two, we're going to have even more of a good time. And the way I want to approach a lot of these episodes this season is we're just going to have a theme for the episode. And today's theme, because of our guest, today's theme is just going to be authenticity. Our guest today embodies showing up, showing out as your authentic self in every space you're in. This man has drank some of the most incredible, coveted bottles of wine in the world. And for some of them, it's been like, oh, what? That's expensive? Okay, cool. I mean, it's good, but yeah, all right. I am truly honored when I get to talk to people that have navigated wine and have experienced wine and are now being ambassadors to other people experiencing wine through their lens the way they do. And just, this man's just dope. I mean, he's from the Bronx, so he can't not be. Have you figured out my guest yet? Today's guest is Mr. Wine and Hip Hop himself, Jermaine Stone. We got to do it for the Bronx.
Yeah, yeah.
You know we got to start with you.
Man. Oh, man. You know what? If you didn't say my name, I wasn't sure you was talking about me for a second.
Come on.
Nah, thank you for having me on, Shakira. This is dope, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to be here with you.
So glad to have you here. You guys know that the duality of me is that, like, I'll eat at a Michelin star restaurant and then, like, go and get a chopped cheese. Well, not directly after, but I equally enjoy Michelin star meals and a good chopped cheese. Word. The bacon, egg, and cheese for breakfast is going to top anything for me.
You know, Tuesday, you might be one spot. Wednesday, you in another.
You never know. You never know with me. And it'll literally be like that.
See you in some low hood spots. Low key.
Catch me at Seafood City.
Early.
But I think that that's the beauty of, you know, what you do and how you share and nuance wine with the people. Like, I feel like people know your story. I don't even want to start with that. I want to start by asking you the first time, whether you knew the bottle was dope or not, the first time you had a sip of wine and said, oh, that's something.
Mm. I can remember the moment. I was at a BYOB dinner before an auction, and it was like my first time going to a BYOB. I had connections with all these clients, personal connections with them. I'd like had dinner with them before all that. But, you know, usually I come from the world where I was on the bid department side. So when bids were active, that's when the BYOB events were happening. Yeah. So after I transitioned and I was on the other side of the business, we had a really dope dinner. And it was a bottle of, it was a 1998 Pellini Montrachet Laflèche.
Remember what I told y'all about this man drinking incredible bottles?
But that, it did it for me. Like, yeah. That was when I fell in love with white Burgundy. It was like magic happened. There was a spark in my mouth at the time. And, you know, later on, I ended up sharing that bottle with one of my favorite producers, Easy Mo B.
Crazy.
Well, it was the 97 vintage that we had. It wasn't a 98, but still.
Still.
You know, it was dope to introduce him to that.
I listened to that episode, and I maybe a week or two after, I had watched like the Biggie joint on Netflix with him in it. And I'm just like, man, these are icons. And to hear you, you know, have an authentic conversation about hip hop, about the culture, about the storytelling, because that to me, like, that's the pairing, right? Is that hip hop as a genre is storytelling. It is an art form that tells the story of these lived experiences. And I feel like that's what we see and get in wine. Like, wine is a story in a bottle. It's a lived experience of a time and a place and a people. So what made you, I mean, it's easy to say, like, I love hip hop, I love wine, I put those two things together. But like, I know that you've said it many times, like, yo, I'm not the one to be studying and telling you all this stuff, but I know what I know, and I know how to translate that into what I love. So like, what was the first moment where you're like, okay, this is how I'm going to present wine to the world. Let me use hip hop to do it.
You know, for years, I'd seen hip hop artists talk about wine in their raps. I remember wanting to send auction catalogs to Jay-Z as soon as I heard him talk about Petrus, you know. So I wanted to get the two worlds together for such a long time because I saw the similarities. I saw dudes rapping about Frank Mueller's and Audemars, you know, like, you should be drinking well also.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really wanted to just find a way to do that. And I felt like I could show you better than I can tell you. You know, I knew that the people that were in the wine industry loved and enjoyed hip hop. And there was misconceptions about them as well. So why don't we get these people at the table and let people begin to hear the conversations and start to see the similarities? But you can also learn about wine the same way that I learned about wine, through conversations, chilling and drinking with smart people. And that's why, for me, it's very important to have a wide range of guests, a big variety of guests that show how dynamic wine can be as a category.
For sure. And I think that we get wrapped up, and I don't think this only happens in wine. I think it happens in a lot of things, right? Like, if you're into fashion, there's high fashion, European couture, there's street fashion, there's avant-garde, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like in everything else, it's cool for people to find their niche and stay in it. But in wine, it seems to be such a disruption. But as I prepared for this interview, I thought about all the parallels I could think of in wine and hip hop, right? And one of them is cadence. So I'm thinking of you as an auctioneer, and I'm thinking about what people think of when they think of an auctioneer. And it's that really fast talk and that, like, I almost thought of like, yo, did Jermaine in his heyday, like, was he like Young Busta with the cadence? Like, is auctioneering wine the same as like what we think of in a car or an art auction?
You know, it depends on the type of auction you're at. You know, charity auctions have a much different energy than commercial auctions.
Okay.
So when I was at Zaki's or at Wally's, for example, you're conducting hundreds of business transactions for thousands of dollars in like 200 times an hour.
Crazy. You know?
So when you're auctioneering at a commercial auction, it's about clarity, making sure that you're not missing any money on the table. You're seeing all online bids, you're seeing all bids in the room, and that you're very clear and easy to understand. You don't want anyone to spend more money than they thought they spent. And at the end of the auction, they're like, hey, look, you know,
I got it.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to tell you.
I got it. So I'm sorry.
See the way my paddle is set up.
But
at charity auctions, it's a completely different flow. At charity auctions, you need to be animated. You are responsible for the energy in the room, and the energy needs to be up. People need to be excited. So I'm not one of those guys that's like 25, 35, 40. Like, I don't do that.
Because I'm like, yo, I'm really trying to. I'm like,
I don't do that. I got a little bit more swag on there. You know, I still stick to my clarity. But I like to have fun with people and make sure that they're having fun and they feel involved. So, yeah, that's how I play it. That's my
thing.
That's
dope. Well, first of all, that's hilarious to me that I always wondered if that happened at auctions. Like, do people bid on things? And then when they close out, they realize like, oh, it was that many zeros. Nah, that's not what I had in mind. That's interesting to know that it does. What happens if that is the case? Like, is it just an embarrassment?
Nah, honestly, they go back and, you know, sometimes, I mean, one, you never want to do that, but sometimes it's sold to the underbidder. You know, if it's truly a bidding error, sometimes it's an auctioneer's error. Sometimes it's a clerk's error. Sometimes it's the bidder's error. It happens.
Oh, man.
It's all about the consigners and making sure the consigners get paid.
That would have to go on like a comedy reel if that really happened. Like, okay. So let's take a minute and talk hip hop for a second. So if you had to correlate a rapper that we know, their cadence, to the cadence of you as an auctioneer at a commercial auction and you as an auctioneer at a charity auction. Mm. What two rappers are we listening to at either one of those? Like, which flow is which of it?
Well, you know, I would have to go with Jay-Z for both of them, you know, because...
Really?
Yeah, because...
So young Jay-Z and older Jay-Z? Because young Jay-Z had a much faster cadence than older.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Well, you know what it is? Jay-Z always has swag on his joints, you know? Jay-Z is known for his flow.
Yeah.
He's known for being able to marry his flow to the beat perfectly, but have a strong mix of dope lyrics, amazing metaphors. So for me, in both Charity and Commercial, I try to really make sure that I'm clear, that people can understand me, but I'm always coming with them punchlines regardless. Like when I was doing Charity auctions, they call the sold price the hammer price because that's the price that you drop the hammer at.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I would drop the hammer, it would be hammer time, you know, like, so the audience would actually know the little punchlines every time I'm about to come on, like, all right, y'all, it's hammer time, bomb.
So,
like, okay, 400, hammer time. But if I'm doing a charity auction, I have to find other ways to get people involved. I might tell people to put their paddles in the air like they just don't care. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to find ways to make sure that I'm always matching the tempo of the flow that I'm on.
That is the read the room moment. In my head, I'm like, all right, so are we at like Busta and the other one, like Big Daddy Kane? I also love Kane. That's why I'm always thinking about Kane. But that's dope. Somebody is going to listen to this and go, yo, this dude was an auctioneer for luxury wine. Like now that we have all these opportunities and spaces being created, if you had to advise somebody like that said, I want to become an auctioneer, how does one become a wine auctioneer?
That is a great question. I think you start by understanding the business. For me, I was a standing bid clerk for like 9 years before I started auctioneering. So I could auctioneer in my sleep just by standing for hours and hours and listening to, to them saying the same thing. And I knew how to read the book. I knew how to read the room. So I would definitely start with any entry level job you can at any bid department at a wine auction house.
Okay.
And work your way up from there. You know, the better you understand the bidding process and the mentality of bidders, the better auctioneer you'll be because you can make changes on the fly and you'll have to.
Mm.
Again, these are like $1,000 transactions that you're doing 200 times per hour. You know, like it could get a little sticky up there if you don't know what you're doing. So I had a lot of time watching it happen. So that's where I learned.
That's one of those worlds where like you actually need to see it and live it and experience it. Like that's not one that you just going to jump in and go, all right, I'm doing this.
Yeah,
like that's the levels to this.
And then there's personality. Mm. Really, it's about feeling comfortable speaking in front of a room and cracking jokes on people from time to time. You know, cracking jokes on yourself. You have to engage people and keep everyone's attention.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of showmanship in it as well. But it's really just about being comfortable with being yourself in front of a big group of people because everybody's special. Everybody's cool. Everybody has that inside the house personality where they real funny, you know? So let the inside the house person outside and you can be an auctioneer.
I love that. The inside person in me cusses a little too much, but
yo, I see the inside Shakira.
Yeah, inside Shakira is
but she's out. She be outside.
Listen, sometimes Shakira I can't keep her in. She's vaccinated. She want to be outside too. I think that, you know, what I am always fascinated with is like everything that you described just now is so much of a soft skill, right? And that transcends wines. You do interviews sometimes with a winemaker or you see interviews and you're like, yo, this is so boring. And the person's story is super interesting, but they are just like, y'all ride.
It drags, yeah.
And then there could be somebody where I'm like, I don't really love this wine, but I could listen to this person talk for hours. So much of that personality in everything that you do matters. I'm interested in like two things. I'm interested in the craziest auction story. Mm. Like there's a lot of wine, there's a lot of money. Those things combined often turn into very, very comical moments. So what is the funniest / craziest auction story you can tell us about?
Oh man. I don't, it's probably not a lot that I can tell
you. It's not safe for a podcast. Okay. All right.
But I mean, you know, I will say this. I learned that wine people are not stuffy, man. I've been to parties where, you know, everybody's ending up dancing barefoot. you know, that was something that really made me feel comfortable. Like, yo, everybody's just like me. We all just want to have fun and have a good time. I did see somebody throw up at a front desk at an auction one time. It was that lit. You know, it was that lit. I saw that happen once. I won't say what auction. I won't say where I was, but it happened.
That is too, you know? I can't do the throwing up. No. So you have been talking about being able to read the room and understanding the room. You, as a Black man, have been in some really interesting rooms. Has there ever been a place where, like, you felt the energy was off, like somebody didn't want you there? You got that inner sixth sense where you're like, it's not the vibe for me. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Vibrations are important. As you know, Zara Vibes is one of my many AKAs. But honestly, I feel like I've been pretty well received by people within the wine industry. Mm-hmm. When I felt any weirdness, it was more so from like customers.
Yeah.
You know, you dealing with the super wealthy and, you know, who is this dude? Like, what? You showing up to my crib to pick up wine? Like, well, he's clearly the assistant. Let me talk to you. Oh, what do you mean? He's in charge. Oh, okay. Mm. And there'd be times like, honestly, I just didn't even care. Like, you know, I'm there to get the wine. I'm not paying attention to, you know, what vibe I might be getting from you. But no, within the people that I worked with, you know, especially at Zaki's and Wally's, I was very lucky to work with good people that were on the same wavelength as I was. You know, I only saw it on the customer side from time to time.
It's funny. I mean, like on the fine dining side, like it's always that, right? It's always another table that looks right. at you like, what are they doing here? Like, I'm eating just like you are. I'm eating food.
The question of so how'd you get into this?
Like, how'd you get in?
How'd you get here? The shock in your voice. I'm not sure if I should feel good or like offended by how shocked you are. You
know? That's always the crazy thing. Like, why is this a real? And it's not even the question. It's why are you comfortable? And what does that answer ever mean? Right? Like, if you ask me, how did you get into food? Like, you know how many times I wanted to say, like, do I look like I miss meals?
By eating it.
Like, I eat. Like, that's the summation of how I get here is I eat. But it would be tone deaf to act like people haven't experienced and that there aren't people that actually feel like people that you and I don't belong in those space. But it's always good to talk about like it being more likely than not that the person or people that try to throw off the vibe hopefully are not the majority, you know? But then we come to see, like, I feel like when you navigate certain spaces, you become comfortable being the only one. You don't like it.
Yeah.
You want more people there because it's trash being the only one. But you also, like, there comes certain times where, like, you're actually unbothered by it. Like, you know it, but it's not even in the top 50 of things that you're thinking of in any given moment. So I want to ask you, you know, what you've built, because it's a whole empire that you've built.
I'm working.
With what you've built, have you seen a difference, like, post this whole reckoning? I feel like you've been in the zone and stay there. But with, like, people that want to work with you, people that want to talk with you, people that want to come on the show, or aspects that you might not even have considered. How has it looked post this reckoning?
Post getting outside.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny that you say that, because when I was thinking about what you said with experiencing people not necessarily wanting you to be there, one of those customers, I actually ran into him the other day at a really dope restaurant. Mm. And, you know, people that he was with knew me. Mm. And they were all like going crazy, asking all these questions and stuff. And they were like, yo, did you meet Jermaine? You got to. Motherfucker, you know me.
You met me. You met me.
But he was one of those people, you know. But now, you know, we had to pretend like I'm like, and I played it off like, yo, I think I seen you around before, blah. You know, again, to me, it's funny. I think it's hilarious when I, you know, see that stuff. But honestly, I don't take it as anything. I look at it as, look, everybody needs to be enlightened at some point. You know, so if I can help you to find who you need to be, thank you. You know, I'm happy to be that person.
There's a little Uzi Vert meme where he's like doing this little shoulder thing. And I always feel that, like, when somebody underestimates me. First of all, I'm actually driven by people underestimating me, right? I love when people do that.
I love it. That's like, why we connect like that.
Yes. Like, please underestimate me. I assure you, it will bring me great joy to disappoint you and show you I am far more than you could have ever perceived me to be, but it also gets tiresome, right? It's also like you have to get to a point. And I think that like ushering in this new, it's almost like a new generation. And I hate saying that because I don't want to feel like I'm that old, but like, I love the I don't give a fuckness about a lot of the new drinkers of wine.
You one of those leaders of the new God, though. You one of those leaders of the new school.
Man. You know? I mean, drink what you like. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I see people drink stuff. I'm like, bro, stop drinking that. But the truth is, even if I said it, this is the generation. Like, I don't care what you want to drink, sis. Like, this is what I'm drinking. I like it. Cool.
Exactly. Maybe you was caught in a situation and that's all they had. All right.
All right. And you know what? Or maybe we just ain't going to drink the same things. Maybe we just ain't going to eat the same things. And that's cool too.
Exactly.
And that's what I love about like bringing in this new, and you are ushering some new, shout out to the young boy Mason coming up with the recent thing.
Yeah, that's
my man. I want to talk about some of these other collaborations that you're doing with, again, this new generation that is just excited about wine, knowledgeable about wine, and finding creative ways to really bring in the space but still remain their authentic self. Talk to us a little bit about like those collabs.
Yeah, nah, definitely. You know, first, definitely, it's always been like a team effort working in wine and hip hop. So guys like my man Capital T, Terrence, who you know, he's stepping outside a little bit more and, you know, he's in the wine game now and he's stepping out more and you'll start to see a lot more from him. He's actually going to be co-hosting with me on a new show that we're doing, Tasting Notes from the Streets. But aside from that, yeah, we working. Aside from that, there's, of course, my dog, Mason. That's my little brother right there. He's like wine and hip hop times 30. He loves Riesling, super passionate, really smart. He also makes a quick appearance in our first episode of Tasting Notes from the Streets. But Mace and I, you know, we connect on, we both like German wine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's one of those people that he's so smart at such a young age. I see so much passion with him. It reminds me of a lot of the way I was when I first started out in wine. Mm. And he's like so much further along than I was. I'm like, bro, you got the whole world in front of you. So anything I could do to help, of course. There's also my man Marquise Williams on IG. His IG name is Freaks Like. I know, it's weird. But his company, highly recommended, is real dope. You know, he has a dope wine club. He's all about people drinking better wine, you know? So he and I got an event series coming up. My dog Vino Martinez, you know, he and I, we on Wine Bars together, another show, which is about—
Yeah, where am I on these shows?
Yo,
listen.
just go to wineandhiphop.com. You'll go to the video section and there's definitely some surprise in there. I can't say I'm trying to grow wine and hip hop culture without being a part of it with other people that have other ideas. I spoke with a dude yesterday who raps, this artist, his name is Green. He's based in Germany, between Germany and he goes back and forth Germany to Provence. Mm-hmm. But this dude raps his tasting notes.
That's dope.
And he's fire. You know, like, sick. And you know, people try the wine rap thing and, you know,
and
it don't be working out.
And it's an absolute. We're not even going to name no names, but it is a fail.
Don't be working out sometimes. Ooh, you know, struggle. But I like the passion. I always respect the passion, you know. But this guy can rap. Mm. He can rap his ass off and he raps tasting notes. So nah, there's a bunch of people out there and I'm really trying to celebrate that and foster that and hopefully invite more people in and continue to collab. Like, we got to do something, you know. We need to do something in the BX.
We gotta get like the BX, like quintessential BX cuisine and pair that up. Like, we gotta go to the patty shop once it's 26.
Oh my gosh, say
we
less.
Gotta get some pizza from Nick's. Like, we gotta go full Bronx with these pairings.
Listen. You know what? I would love to do something that to try to bring more education into the area that we from in the BX. You know, like, the education is going to bring passion.
Yeah, it's already in the works. I mean, and the Bronx is such, you know, we have to have a Bronx moment. This segment is going to be the Bronx segment. Like, I can't wait now that the world is open. You know, you got the Lip Bar.
Oh, yes.
Owned by
a
fellow Bronxite that just saw a need. And I think that that's the beauty and the authenticity of it. Like, she's a girl from the Bronx that liked to read and there were no bookstores. So she opened the bookstore.
You know, like, story is crazy.
It's like, so amazing. That is why the underlying theme of this episode is about authenticity, that you could truly be. And, you know, it's funny. It's like authenticity, like identity, like it's nuanced. There's a lot of intersectionality in it. Like, I'm always going to be a Bronx girl, but I like nice things, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And those two things are not separate. They're actually all interconnected and all intertwined. Sometimes I don't want a Michelin meal. Sometimes I want a styrofoam container of jerk chicken with some hardo bread. It and I don't even want to eat it at a table. I want to sit outside and I want to talk with my people and eat that and enjoy that.
Right on the side of the car, blasting the music real quick.
That's it. And people watching. You know what I mean? And so I think that, like, what the beauty in what you do and what I truly, like, really respect and am constantly inspired by is you can be yourself and just pursue all the things that you love. And I think that wine, for a long time, wine had an identity that if you wanted to do it, you needed to conform to this. And I think the beauty of the shift is that, nope, you can embrace it and enjoy it in your own space. Like, there's still things, you know, that education part is always going to be key, right? It's about anything. Sure. If you got into basketball, it's some things you got to know, right? You have to know the basics. If you wanted to start watching football, I'm a big soccer fan. You need to understand why there's so many cards. Why? How come if you kick them on this side and you kick them on this side, it's not okay? Everything that we take on, that we embrace, that we immerse ourselves and require some level of knowledge. But you can do that. Like, I don't need to go to soccer school to learn the game of soccer, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's dope. Now we got to talk a little bit about some dope wines now. Mm. What wines are you excited about now? Like, I am on this Greek trip and my God, I have just been drinking incredible Greek wines. Like, mind-blowingly good. I can't pronounce half the shit. I'm not even going to lie to you. But these wines are freaking phenomenal. What are you drinking right now that has you super excited?
I'm not going front. I'm still on the German kick. I've been in Germany for a little while. It started out as kind of working with a little collab with Wines of Germany back in the winter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, you learn things for a reason. And I didn't realize it was like 136 varietals in Germany.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and really started getting into, like, German Pinot Noir, you know, Balfrankish, like, just really enjoying a lot of German wines, man. So that's where I'm at right now.
I mean, those wines are great, particularly for people that don't like the bigger, bolder styles of wines.
Yeah.
Like, those wines are light, they're refreshing, and they're priced where you could buy a case of it and not feel like you broke your bank at all.
Exactly. You can buy old stuff, you know. I mean, it's dope. And I like the culture. I like the people. And that's another big part of wine for me. Like, French wine will always be my passion. Mm. At the end of the day, that's my first love. The replacement will never go away. That will never be replaced. But, nah, man. This summer, I've definitely been digging on some German wine.
Germany is a really dope place, and I want people to really, like, Wines of Germany and the collabs that they're doing, I think it's important because those wines are intimidating for no other reason that you can't read the bottle. Like,
for
I can't pronounce
and
this. It's got 85,000 letters in it. Like,
yo,
that is the intimidating
factor. That's what kept me away.
Yeah.
That's what kept me away, like, honestly. And I'm at this place now where I'm at a place of, like, exploration with wine, you know, and I'm digging into to like entire regions at a time. I'm on one wave at a time right now. And, you know, that involves, as you know, getting into the culture, the people.
Yeah.
You know, I want to meet the winemakers.
Immersion.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I like to really immerse myself. Absolutely.
You just came back from Italy. How was that? Like, you outside,
out the country, outside.
Outside. How was that?
Yo, that was such a fun trip, man. It was dope. It was weird, right? I'm so glad I can talk about this openly. Like, it was cool. But the day that 750 article came out, it was the day that I landed. So everybody's like wine industry people. And, you know, I'm kind of like a shy dude, you know, on the low. So it was a lot of attention immediately as soon as I landed. But, you know, it was good. I was there with friends, people like my man, Yannick Benjamin.
Yannick,
shout out to Yannick.
There.
So I was there for Five Star Star Wines and Wine Without Walls, which is put together by Vinitaly. It's an Italian wine competition. You know, they are now not just looking at like old world stuff, but there's a lot of like natural wines that they're also rating. So that was a difference for this year. And I was a part of the team that was going through some of the natural wines. So that was really cool, man. I've obviously done tastings before, but intense tasting, like 56 flights a day sort of thing, like flights, not wines, flights per day.
Palate fatigue is real.
Palate fatigue is a motherfucker, man. And, you know, was a new experience for me, especially needing to write intensive tasting notes like that. Doing it in a group setting was cool because, you know, you really end up starting to form one opinion. You start to see everyone's scores are like the same because we're talking so much that we start to evaluate things in the same way. It was dope, man. Shout out to my girl Stevie Kim and Rebecca Lawrence out there, Vinitaly. I told them, I was like, this was a life-changing experience for me. You know, I'm going to live my wine life differently now just based on what we did there. So it was a lot of fun. I'm very appreciative of the opportunity.
That is amazing. I lived vicariously through your stories. I think it's stuff like that that people need to see. Like, your wine knowledge comes a lot from simply tasting. And when you talk to people, like before the advent of formal wine education, you know, like these winemakers that have been making wine, they've just been tasting with their dad, with their grandfather, with, you know what I mean? Like, it's really just been like creating, we always talk about on this show, like creating this mental Rolodex of things for you to always be able to, shit, I had this before, where, why, when, you know, and that is a skill that anybody can build if you're intentional about it.
And it takes practice.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how much practice that really takes.
It's a lot. Know? And the Rolodex is subjective. You and I can have a set of tasting notes that don't make sense to anybody that's not from the Bronx or that's not from New York. right? Like, literally, we can have, because we not talk about Barnyard. We talk about like hot Subway. Like, you know, you ever been stuck on a platform at 149th and Grand Concourse before? And that's the same thing where it's like, if we said that, that triggers a memory to a lot of people. But to a lot of people, that doesn't mean anything at all. So I'm like, when we're talking about wine, we're talking about wet forest floor. Like, how do you tell somebody from like the inner, not the inner city as in like socioeconomically distressed? I literally mean from a concrete jungle. How do you tell somebody that something smells like forest floor?
Yeah, seriously.
What would be the reference point for that? Doesn't make sense. So, you know, like I love seeing and hearing people talk about like developing these tasting notes and tasting them and forcing yourself to really think like, what am I tasting? What am I smelling? And how is that translating into what I'm writing down? It's the most fun part of wine for me, honestly.
Yeah,
and
for
I
real.
Love it.
That was life changing for me because I come from a different side of the business where, you know, I'm back end, I'm operation. So me being able to really get into this side of it has just been life changing. I'm going to do it a lot more. And I definitely want to bring a lot more of my people along with me. Like you said, that's how you build the skill. It's true.
Because they have interesting perspectives. Yo, I love tasting with people that don't actually have a wine vocabulary. Because I learned, like, you know what? They are 100% right.
This is very, like, strawberry now or later-ish.
Right!
Like, I get that.
I get it. Like, I've used that church lady candy for everybody that grew up in the church. You know that one lady had them little strawberry candies. Like, that's a tasting note. And it's a legitimate one. You know, I always laugh when people call things spicy, like jalapeno. I'm like, I'm West Indian. That's not spicy.
Oh. I laugh at jalapeno. Yeah, talk like to me about some scotch bonnet, mind
you. Scotch butter, yo. Otherwise, it's not spicy to me. But imagine people from Southeast Asia that are eating like ghost chilies and stuff. Like a jalapeno is a joke.
Different.
It's so dope and so necessary for people to bring their authentic selves. And I think especially as, you know, as a woman of color, you as a Black man, like sometimes authenticity, people try to define what authenticity is. For you, for me. I'm like, nope, I get to define what authenticity is for me. So if I'm eating like Michelin star food one day and then Grace Papaya the next day, that is still authentically me. And nobody gets to pull me out of that. And I think that for everybody, if you're from the Midwest, eat Michelin food and your Frito pie. That's fine. If you're from California, eat Michelin star food, drink high-end wine, and go get Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. That's fine. You know what I mean? Like authenticity is not singular. It's all these things.
It's everything.
I really, really, really commend you for just living that in everything that you do. It's respected and it's inspiring.
I appreciate it. Honestly, I'm honored that, you know, I'll be on a show even themed with that, because that's something I really try to pride myself on. And I try to be as authentic as possible to the wine community and to the hip hop community. And that's something I stand on. So being able to be on this show and really highlight that, I'm very appreciative. So thank you for once again giving me the platform.
Of course. All right. So now is the fun time. Now we got the hot seat questions. All right. Oh, no thinking about this stuff. Just straight answers. All right. First question. If you had to give a percentage, how much of wine do you think is absolute bullshit?
I would say 60%.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah. everything has gone right in the day. Just everything. Just alignment. Vibrations off the chart. What do you drink?
I'm drinking, gosh, this sounds terrible. And I promise you, this is what it is. It's white burgundy.
Of course it is.
It's the truth. Like, that's what I like to drink. No, you know what, too? Right now, I'm also into, like, Etna Bianco.
Okay.
I'm really jamming on that. As you can tell, I like light, refreshing wines.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I'm mostly in my zone. You know, I sometimes partake in a little marijuana with my wine, and I think they complement each other well.
We're going to have a whole episode on.
It's a whole different show.
That's a whole different,
Noted. But yeah, nah, like that with some Chardonnay, it goes.
All right. I'm in a parking lot that. We're going to talk about that more on another episode. The day is absolute shit. Nothing has gone well. Like, you about to throw 16 tables. What do you drink?
Real talk, it's probably not wine.
Oh, that's fine. What is it?
Let's see. It's probably going to be some bourbon. Mm. If it's a hard day, I'm not going to the wine. It's like I need to totally step back and space out. I got a bad temper when I have a bad temper. So, you know.
Listen, single malt will fix everything.
I'll go right back, you know, maybe do some Knob Creek, something like that.
Are you drinking yours neat? Are you on the rocks? How are you?
I'm a neat.
Yeah, too.
Definitely.
So,
I feel like that's where you really taste in the craftsmanship.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. For me, that's where it's enjoyable. It forces a slower sip where you can savor it and really process. So I'm there with you. All right. So we had what we drank on our best day, what we drank on our worst day. We talked a little bit about what kind of wines are you drinking now. Bottle of wine that you haven't yet had that you're dying to taste.
Oh my gosh. Bottle of wine I haven't had yet that I would dying to taste. Like, what vintage of DRC should it be? I mean, you know.
Agreed.
And it needs to be with Jay-Z too. Like, you know, I've had like Riesborg from the 90s before, you know. But on a whim, like as a choice, boom.
DRC, for sure.
I have to go with some DRC, man. It doesn't matter the vintage. Doesn't matter the vineyard. Just bring it to
any
my table.
Just put it at the table, please. Thank you so much for bringing this to me. I think it's important to keep like a bucket list wine that like you want to taste one day. Like, I have a couple, but I want to taste them because I want to see like, are these wines really what I'm expecting? Like, are they really living up to the hype, or are people just really blowing smoke and making these things seem like they're actually, you know, like the greatest thing ever? I remember people saying that about Dancing Jackets. Like, oh, it's just a leather jacket. I'm like, you don't have one. That's why you think it's just a leather jacket.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I always think like, is wine going to be the same thing for me?
The Vanson of wine.
Right. Like, what is the Vanson of wine? Very dope. I'm going to have to write about that because that's super dope. I need everybody to know where to follow you. Please let the people know on social media, on the web, where are we following?
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow our podcast, Wine and Hip Hop, at Wine and Hip Hop Show on Instagram and Facebook. You can follow me at Real Wolf of Wine on Instagram, and also go to our website, wineandhiphop.com, or just Google Wine and Hip Hop and your boy will pop up.
Oh, the flex. The flex when you know you are the Google.
Just Google first. Wine and Hip Hop if you need to find me.
The humble flex in that. Nah, you know. Ever humble. There's no humble in that flex.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you got to actually flex, you know.
Like, I hear that flex. Yeah.
I could talk about the craziness, man.
Yo, I am so appreciative of having you on the show today. I cannot wait for us. Like, in my head, I'm like, damn, yo, do we need to do like a Taste of Notes from the Street episode at Yonic Spot, since Yonic is also a Bronx site?
Oh,
yeah,
man.
We have to talk offline about that. So many wheels turning now. But I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for spending time, you know, really diving into this theme of authenticity and everything and everywhere that we go is so important. And some of my favorite people that I've learned the most in wine from, I've gravitated towards them because they're so authentic in the way they speak, in the way they carry themselves, in the way they approach wine. And I think that that goes a very, very long way as people embark on this journey in wine. I want to thank our guest, Jermaine Stone, for being here. This is a full circle moment.
For sure.
From literally meeting at a wine and hip hop event.
That's right.
This is a true shout out to Dustin for creating that space too. Thank you so much for being here. Guys, thank you so much for listening to A Glass for Every Palate. Until next week, bye.
Yeah.
All right, guys, again, thank you for listening. This episode was brought to you by Eldon Selections. I have been telling you guys about joining this wine club if you're looking to dive a little bit deeper into Burgundy. In addition to having great hidden gems, there are amazing perks to membership. You are automatically entered into a drawing for a 4-day, 3-night stay at Domaine de Romay and a free tasting in Burgundy valued at over $250 with no expiration date. So as soon as France lets everyone back in, you've got that in the bag. And just for our SOM TV family, use the code SOM, that's S-O-M-M, for 15% off your first purchase of $200 or more. Go and visit burgundywine.com/SOM, S-O-M-M.